This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 23rd. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a freedom ride for voting rights made a stop yesterday in Denver. We'll hear from those on the bus. A Boulder group is seeking to raise awareness about the role of an abandoned structure on public lands in the history of Indigenous displacement from the region. And finally, herbalist Brigitte Mars will tell us about those plants with the creamy white flowers popping up all over town in her weekly segment, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's Good Ol' CU with Joe Uhas. It's all still ahead this morning after these headlines with Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed new measures into law that seek to help victims of domestic violence. House Bill 1255 sets up a process to ensure that persons subject to a domestic violence-related protection order turn in their guns. Someone accused of domestic violence and who has such an order is now required to provide information within 7 business days of that order about all the guns they own, including where they're stored. Nearly 12,000 protection orders will require persons to surrender their guns under the new law, according to a state analysis. And the Denver Post reports that in the city of Denver, even under the old law, 10 firearms per month have been turned in during the last 2 years. One of the other laws Polis signed allocates $15 million to victim support services, especially for those who have been subjected to domestic violence and sexual assault. And the third new law increases training standards for court employees in connection with domestic violence. The state health department released data yesterday showing that half of Colorado's population is fully immunized against COVID-19. That equates to 2.8 million people fully vaccinated. The number of people hospitalized with the coronavirus continues to fall. Less than 300 were in the hospital as of yesterday, the lowest level since early October. While the U.S. is likely to fall short of President Biden's goal to vaccinate 70% of all Americans by July 4th, Governor Polis said on Facebook that he is confident Coloradans can meet that goal, in part due to the weekly lottery drawing for those who are vaccinated. Meanwhile, the state is calling unvaccinated people to encourage them to get a vaccination appointment. Colorado Public Radio reports that because the state is not trying to sell anything, the calls are not a violation of the state's no-call registry. About 500,000 people will be called, their numbers coming from publicly available information. In Boulder County, the health department reported 9 new COVID-19 cases yesterday, 2 new hospitalizations, and no new deaths. On the West Slope, hospital beds in Mesa County are again at more than 95% capacity as of yesterday, but the Daily Sentinel reports that the 2-week count of new cases has declined in recent days. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett has introduced a couple of bills that would fund the cleanup of abandoned oil and gas wells on federal lands. Bennett, a Democrat, reintroduced measures that he has pushed last year. A release from Bennett's office states that the pair of bills would restore local governments and taxpayers' role in public land management decisions while ensuring they are not left on the hook for future cleanup and remediation costs. Bennett's release also referred to 57,000 orphaned wells that dot the U.S. and pose threats to public health and safety. The Daily Sentinel reports that Bennett's measure would modernize bonding requirements for companies to ensure sites are reclaimed and the costs covered. An initiative aimed at animal cruelty was rejected by the Colorado Supreme Court on Monday. The measure proposed removing an exemption for livestock in state laws for animal cruelty and would have expanded the definition of a sex act with an animal. Initiative 16 would have made artificial insemination against the law and would have required that ranch animals live 25% of their lifespan before heading to slaughter. The Colorado Sun reports that the state high court ruled that the measure violates a clause in the state constitution because the ballot question covers unrelated topics. Proponents of the measure will now have to file a new one if they choose to move forward. Republicans in El Paso County will feature controversial U.S. Congress member Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia as their keynote address speaker at the GOP's dinner in August. The event is the annual Lincoln Day fundraiser. Colorado Politics reports that Green, a strong ally of former President Donald Trump, has triggered outrage and was removed from her committee assignments after it was discovered she had made social media posts calling for the execution of Democratic leaders, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Green also said, among other things, that the 2018 school shooting in Parkland, Florida, was a false flag operation meant to scare Americans into supporting gun control. Firefighters across the state continue to battle multiple wildfires. The Sylvan Fire in Eagle County led to mandatory evacuations yesterday evening. The fire has grown to more than 3,300 acres with no containment. The Oil Springs Fire in Rio Blanco County has grown to more than 7,000 acres with no containment. And the Muddy Slide Fire continues to burn in Rout County. An air quality health alert for wildfire smoke has been issued for the state by state health officials for parts of Rout County and Eagle County. Moderate to heavy smoke from the Muddy Slide wildfire in southern Rout County and the Sylvan Fire in Eagle County, along with several other state, in-state and out-of-state wildfires, will continue to impact that area through today through Thursday morning. In the weather, you may notice smoke in the metro area, mainly before 9 this morning. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy with highs in the mid to upper 90s. Tomorrow, cooler with highs in the mid 80s and a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning and likely in the afternoon. Right now, it's about 68 in Boulder, 73 in Denver, and 66 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
On the 60th anniversary of the 1961 Freedom Rides from Washington, D.C. through the South, Unite Here Local 23 has teamed up with Black Voters Matter in the Freedom Ride for Voting Rights. Buses are moving across the country, converging on Washington, D.C. to demand federal action to protect voting rights. Yesterday, a group of modern-day freedom riders from California and Nevada stopped at the Martin Luther King Jr. statue in Denver's City Park. KGNU's Dave Ashton was there and gathered these interviews.
Hi, guys. I'm Eileen Scott. I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada, Union 226. So we're here. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks, Denver. Yes.
Gosh, you're coming off the bus on Freedom Ride for Voting Rights. Tell us a little bit about the whole movement.
We're really celebrating the 60th year of the Freedom Ride, and so I wanted to be a part of it to make the history, and we just got to get this voting rights pass for all. We don't want another Jim Crow 2, and so we're just making sure that everyone has their voice heard.
So there's people from all over the country here.
Yes, there is, and I'm meeting so many people. They're so excited that we all, no matter where you live and where you're from, we all have the same issues and same problems, and we want to get the same solutions and get it done. And it's very sad that we're still fighting after all these years for the same rights to be heard, to be counted for. And what the union does is amazing, and it's bringing us all together so they can hear all of our voices. And so that's what we're here to do.
What made you, like, spurn to action?
Well, I started with the president election, and I was like, okay, we have to make a change. It's time. Like, we have so many people going out protesting, but no one's taking the knowledge to know that it takes the vote and getting the right people in office to make these changes. So I wanted to be part of the changes, and the only way to be part of these changes is with the voting and getting the right people in to represent you. For so many years, we've been... Oh, that's the way it's always been, is that's the way it's going to be. It's not going to be any changes. But people with power, with group, with amount of people together makes a difference. And we want them to know it makes a difference. And I think they saw that it did make a difference of all race coming out and voting. And so that's why they're trying to suppress us and stop it. But we're not going to let that happen. We're going to keep going. We're going to keep fighting. Yes. Coming from Vegas all the way to Washington, we'll be all going to end up on Saturday. So on along the way, we're going to meet up with other groups. We're going to just do that bonding thing and get this stuff going, getting the voting. And Unite Here is amazing. I work with them in Georgia. We got the Senate race. And so we're going to keep going.
What's the spirit like on the buses? How's the vibe?
Gosh, amazing. Everyone is so excited. And these bus rides are long and... you would think people would be grumpy, but we're taking the cost. We got it easy compared to 60 years ago. Okay, we don't have the Klans and other people protesting and pulling us off. So we are taking advantage of that, and so just making change for that. So,
what else would you like KGNU's listeners to know?
Knowledge. Read up, see what's going on, understand what's going on. If once you know, then you can make the change.
They say take away.
We say no way.
They say take away.
We say no way.
Take away.
No way.
Take away.
No way.
My name is Lynn Sharp with the San Diego Imperial County's Labor Council. I'm the coordinator for Partnership for Better San Diego.
When did the Freedom Ride for Voting Rights become an idea, and how did it all come about?
Well, actually, it already started in the 60s. I'm a 60s baby. Oh. So it just was the movement that just had to take off slowly. But now, that's why I mentioned we've come too far to turn back now. There's been some blood, sweat, and tears up until this point. It's no way that we need to go backwards. We need to go forward, not just for the present, but for the future.
There are different groups of buses making their way across the country, all meeting in D.C.
Absolutely, yes. There's going to be over about 30 buses joining, so they all cross the country. They're doing their rallies. So, but all the rallies combined is one big voice of what we're doing and what we're sending that message. So we will meet up at one point, and then we will ride in mighty 30 buses, over 1,500 of us, ready. Ready to stand strong in unity.
You've come from San Diego all the way to Denver, continuing this movement. Here we are at the Martin Luther King statue. What has been the spirit and the vibe of the ride so far?
Oh, my God. You know what? From day one, the energy was already there. The foundation has already been laid. So we are really standing on the foundation of what our forefathers done. Freedom Riders, we are standing on that foundation. That foundation maybe cracked at one time, but now it's been sealed to the point where we're no longer going to crack. We are going to move to the point where this earth is shaking.
It is very intergenerational. There are families here. They're, like you say, children of the 60s like yourself. And you say the continuity is not going to be broken.
No.
What do people need to know in order to keep that flow forward?
Stay engaged. Educate yourself of why we are here. Why are we doing this? You know, there's a reason why. Because we have power in our people. There's power in the vote. Vote, our vote matters so strong to where they're trying to suppress it. That doesn't let anybody know that something is going on when it comes to voting. So we are here to stand strong and to make our votes count, to make our voice count, and to make one people count along everybody else, amongst everybody else in this country.
Do you see this as really fulfilling the vision that this country has always strived for, never fully accomplished?
Absolutely, because just think about it. It was a busload, a handful of people that started this, Mr. Lewis. Now look at, we're talking about 30 buses from across the country. Man, if that's not moving, I don't know what is. We are unified, we are ready, and we are on fire to make our voice known, to be present in this voter's right. For the People's Act.
Thanks for being on KGNU today.
Thank you so kindly for asking me to be here.
We'll have more on voting rights and voices from yesterday's Freedom Ride stop in Denver at 9 a.m. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The City of Boulder's Open Space and Mountain Parks Department is weighing what to do with a tract of land it purchased in 2018 that has ties to the violent forced displacement of Cheyenne and Arapaho peoples from this region. The remains of the Fort Chambers sod structure is located at what is now 3902 North 63rd Street. In 1864, it served as an outpost for white militiamen occupying Cheyenne and Arapaho lands in violation of a signed treaty. Those militiamen went on to commit an act of mass murder known as the Sand Creek Massacre. The Right Relationship Boulder's Land Working Group is working to educate the public about this history and the role of the Fort Chambers site in it. They will be holding a virtual public meeting tonight at 7 p.m. KGNU's Elena Claver spoke with one of the event's organizers.
Geraldine Dakota is one of the founding members of Right Relationship of Boulder, and she's part of the land working group of that organization. She's from the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa in North Dakota. So welcome, Geraldine, and tell us, what is this presentation that is coming up on June 23rd?
Well, thank you, Elena. I'm really excited to be able to talk about this presentation for KGNU and your listeners. It is a presentation of the story of Fort Chambers, which is located in Boulder at about 63rd Street near Valmont. So it's an important story to Boulder. So let me just start with my own land acknowledgement. And I do want to recognize that I'm on the homeland of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute peoples, and the recognized territory of the Arapaho peoples, recognized in the Treaty of 1851 of Fort Laramie. So Boulder was actually settled in violation of that treaty. And it wasn't long after Boulder was settled that Fort Chambers was built. And it was built because of the fear of Indian uprisings, which never really happened in this area at all. But Fort Chambers was a sod fort that was built where about 100 plus citizen militia from Boulder mustered out and trained. And the idea was to go down and help with the massacre that took place at Sand Creek. So we have a really important connection to Sand Creek and to the Arapaho people here in Boulder. And the thing about this history, of course, it's not known, which is unfortunate. So we want to bring this to light and share that story. But the particular reason that we have become so interested in this and wanting to tell people about it is because Fort Chambers was recently acquired by the City of Boulder Open Space. There are about 110 acres at Fort Chambers, and it was acquired in 2018. So the city is required of all their open space to go through a planning process to create a management plan for their open space. So they will be doing that with Fort Chambers, and they will be consulting in a formal consultation process with the stakeholders. And those stakeholders include, in our view, the Arapaho and Cheyenne tribes, who were those who were attacked and murdered at Sand Creek. So we've been talking to the people at Open Space in the City of Boulder, encouraging them to consult with these tribes and to really follow their lead on what should be done with Fort Chambers. Of course, there will be other stakeholders, so it may be easier said than done. And that's why we are so anxious to educate the people of Boulder, because we think that they'll understand, once they hear the story, the significance, the historical and the cultural, educational, and spiritual importance of Fort Chambers to these tribes, to the Arapaho and the Cheyenne, but also to the people of Boulder. This is an opportunity for the city to really do something to acknowledge and correct and complete the history of Boulder. So that's kind of what we're doing. You may recall that in 2016, the city adopted an Indigenous Peoples Day resolution and created a permanent Indigenous Peoples Day on the first Monday of October each year. And in that resolution, the city acknowledged that Boulder has benefited directly from Indian removal policies that violated human rights, broke treaties, and forced the Arapaho from their land. And it resolves to correct omissions in public places, resources, and in cultural programming. So this whole opportunity with Fort Chambers really fits squarely within the commitments that are made in that 2016 Indigenous Peoples Day resolution. So we're pretty excited that we have that kind of inspiration and guideline to go by, and the city can use that, the open space can use that in their consultation process to create a management plan for that open space property at Fort Chambers. That's really it in a nutshell. We're encouraging consultation with the Arapaho and Cheyenne to create a management plan that allows for uses by the tribes and to follows their recommendations for uses of that property. And basically what we'd be doing is transforming a place of racist violence into a place of remembrance and learning and dialogue and reparations. It's really a place to begin right relations.
What is the information about the presentation? How can people get involved? And how can people express urging the open space to consult with the Cheyenne and Arapaho leaders.
So if they are part of Right Relationship Boulder, they can email Right Relationship Boulder. And we do have a Facebook page, and they can log on to that by just typing in Right Relationship Boulder. And there will be a link there to that presentation. It's a slideshow, and it's about 20 minutes long, but there will be, you know, a discussion afterwards. And we've shown this in many places already, but not just to the general public. So this is our first foray. So we're really excited about that. And I should say, it is free and open to the public, but you need to register.
I'm Geraldine Dakota from Right Relationship Boulder. Thank you so much.
That was Elena Claver speaking with Geraldine Dakota of the Right Relationship Boulder's Land Working Group. You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Up next is Naturally with Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and I've been seeing this beautiful, spiky-looking plant blooming with creamy white flowers. What is that? It's yucca. So yucca is actually in the Agaveaceae family, a relative of agave. So it has really spiky leaves. And the word yucca is a Caribbean name for cassava, a plant that was once thought to be in the same genus. So what is this yucca thing good for? Well, the root has been used as a medicine, as an anti-rheumatic and an anti-inflammatory agent. It's also mildly laxative. However, digging up the root is going to destroy the plant, and we don't want to do that. But there are saponins in yucca that help to accelerate the breakdown of organic waste. And yucca is a plant that has a long history of being used and is found in herbal remedies very often for things like arthritis, gout, rheumatism, prostatitis, because it has some anti-inflammatory compounds. So yucca has long served as a wild food, and the white blossoms can be harvested, and I did a stir fry with them with chili powder and lime the other day, and they were great. You can eat the flowers raw. They have been used to make tempura. However, that's not so healthy to do too often. Yuccas also have like a little squashy kind of thing, a little seed capsule that when it's young can be baked. It's amazing. And I've actually baked it in my solar oven. So it's the yucca seed pods, when they're young and tender, can be eaten as a vegetable or even ground into a flour. And of course, some species of yucca are made into tequila and mezcal. Yucca has also been a very important fiber plant. The fibers from the pointy, spiky leaves, which you don't want to get cut with, are very sharp, have been used to make shoes and rope and mats and fishing lines and like thread and needles. Yes, that will even sew through leather. Wow. So yucca root has also been used as a type of soap. It will lather up. And I've seen some shampoos that have yucca that you can use, wash your hair, and have a great hair day. Yes, there is a moth that lives in the yucca flowers that pollinates it. So if you do collect the yucca flowers, spread them out, give the moths a few hours so they can escape. And wishing you well, honor the local wild plants, and harvesting some flowers will not damage the plant. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine.